Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Tes Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Seches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Before we begin our shiur, make sure that you have available the book that we have been recommending along the way, the Sichas Chulin, for its fine illustrations that will accompany today's shiur as well as every subsequent daf in the Masechta. As we turn our attention to the upper part of Daf Tes Zayin, the second line from the top, we notice a Tanaic quote on the third line from that which we learned in our previous shiur. We were discussing different types or methods of shechita that are acceptable or unacceptable. Our opening discussion concerns a wheel to which there is attached a knife. It's called a muchni. Omar mar, hashochet b'muchni, shechitaso ksher. One who uses the wheel that has a blade attached to it for shechita, that's acceptable. The Gemara asks, v'hotanya shechitaso psula, but we have a contrasting Tanaic source dealing also with a muchni, and it says there that the shechita is psula, is unacceptable. Lo kashya, there is no contradiction between these two sources. Ha besad besarno de pachro, ha besarno de maya. Sarno de pachro is a potter's wheel. You can see an illustration of what we are talking about in the Sichas Chulin, where he illustrates a person working with a wheel to which there is attached a the wheel has a blade attached to it, as you can see, with the animal lying on the bottom, on the floor. And since that is operated by the person, that constitutes an acceptable shechita. However, a sarna de maya, a water wheel, whose motion is put into action as a result of the flow of water, so you don't have a person involved, what's called koyach odom. You don't have a koyach odom involved in the revolutions of the wheel. Hence, it's not acceptable. V'iboyesema havaha b'sarna demaya. Another approach is that both of these Tanaic sources are dealing with a water wheel. But we asked, if it's a water wheel, how could the source that says shechitaso ksheira be reliable? V'lo kashya. And still, there is no difficulty. There is no contradiction between these two sources. Ha b'koyach rishon, ha b'koyach sheni. Koyach rishon would be the initial revolution of the wheel when the wheel is positioned next to a wall that has a gate to it, but the wall is currently blocking the flow of water. If you have the animal and the wheel located right next to the water gate, and you lift the gate up, that which is blocking the water from flowing, as soon as you pick up the gate, there is an initial flow of water. That initial flow of water is associated with the person's energy, with the human involvement, and hence that first flow of water, provided it's right next to the flow of the water is right next to the wheel, that is called koyach adam, and that first revolution is associated with the person allowing the flow of water to take place. However, if, let us say, the wheel is located at some distance from that gate that was just opened, then it's gravity that's responsible for the water causing the wheel to revolve, and hence that would be the case of shechitaso psula. This idea of koach rishon, koach sheni, is now going to be applied in a totally different context, but the same principle applies, And this has to do with a murder, where a person, let us say, there is an individual, call him the victim, is tied up next to a wall blocking water from flowing. And then the perpetrator comes along and lifts up the gate, causing a torrent of water to flow and drown an individual. So if the individual is tied right next to where the gate blocking the water is, and the perpetrator comes and picks up and allows a flow of water to flow and hence drown the individual, he will be responsible on the count of capital murder. Whereas if the same scenario, same situation happens, but the person is tied up somewhere downstream, and the perpetrator picked up the gate, allowing the water to flow, and the individual is not drowned immediately, but as a result of the continuous flow of the water eventually reaching him at a distance, then that's not called first degree murder, and hence he wouldn't be chayav. The perpetrator would not be guilty of murder. The Gemara now mentions this. V'chi ha de Omar Rav Papa. This idea between Koach Rishon and Koach Sheni parallels that which Rav Papa teaches. Haiman de Kafte Lechavre, someone who tied up, bound his friend, V'ashkil ole bidka de Maya, and caused a flow or torrent of water to inundate him. Umis, and the tied up victim died. Chayov, the person who caused the flow of water to drown him is responsible. Mai taimo, why is this? Answer, giri didehu dahani vei. This is a borrowed expression. Giri literally means his arrows were effective in killing him. But the arrows really are a reference to, just like when an arrow is shot, the movement of the arrow is associated with the person's invested energy. Otherwise, the arrow would simply not have flown. So too, the flow of water is associated with the person who allowed it to flow. The Hani Mili, this is true, that is considered Giri Didei, his arrows, his force. That's Bekoyach Rishon. If it's the initial flow of water that caused the individual to drown. Avo Bekoyach Sheni, if it's secondary meaning that the water started flowing and the individual was located further away, not right next to the initial flow, so that's considered, the person's involvement is of a secondary nature in that sense, in that case. So groma bi'almahu, it's considered causative as opposed to direct, and as a result of that there would be no capital case. Yosef, this is now we should point out a new discussion, and the issue being dealt with over here is, from where do I know that shechita must be done with a knife that's detached, that's loose, in other words, not attached to the ground. Yosef Rav Achorei de Rabbi Chiya. Rav was seated behind Rabbi Chiya, and Rabbi Chiya kamei de Rabbi, and Rabbi Chiya was seated in the presence in front of Rabbi. The Yosef Rabbi, the Ka'omar Rabbi, was seated and then raised a question and said, "Minayin l'shchita shu tolush? From where is it known that shchita is done with an element, a utensil that's detached? For convenience sake, we can say with a knife that's detached." Shenemar vayikach es hamacheles l'shchot. This is in the context of the Avraham Avinu attempted sacrificing of Yitzchak, what we call the Akedas Yitzchak. So it says that Avraham Avinu took the machelis, the knife, he took it to Shecht. So the fact that he took it indicates that it's something that's detached. Amar lei Rav l'Rabbi Chiya, mai ka'omar. Rav asked Rabbi Chiya, well, what was Rabbi saying? Omalei, so Rabbi Chiya responds in an offhanded fashion, and he says, "Vov dechsiv aufto komar." What Rabbi Chiya is trying to say is that what Rabbi was suggesting as a source for shchita being min hatolush is the source that he suggested is just inappropriate and unreliable. Now, the literal translation of this also is accompanied by a diagram in the Sichas Chulin. It's like someone trying to etch out a vav on a piece of rough surfaced wood, and the attempt to draw a vav on a rough surface piece of wood. A vav is a letter, so the attempt to draw a letter on a piece of on a rough surface will not be successful. It won't appear as a letter vav. Rashi, in explaining this phrase, says klomar tam she'eno nochon komar, a reason that's not accurate was said. Kamoshi kosei vav al habakas v'kula minusachas leprokim v'nei shine habakas. The whole letter appears to be just fragmented because of the roughness of the log. Shehein asuyin charitzin charitzin v'eno chaloka. The Gemara goes on after Reb Chiya says that, well, what Rebbe said is not reliable, but did he not offer a pasuk? How can you say that what he says is not reliable when he's quoting a pasuk? So we answer, it's not reliable, because kro zrizuse davrom komash malon. The pasuk is reporting to us the diligence of Avram. In other words, Avram was on his way to do the Akedah, to do this sacrificing of his son, and ordinarily people may say, well, when I get to the site of sacrifice, I'll find a sharp rock, I'll find something that I can use for slaughtering. Avram took into consideration that maybe at the slaughtering site there won't be anything available, so he took with him at the outset a knife, a macheles, for the purpose of shechita. But not that the taking of the macheles represents an insistence on using something that's detached. This Gemara doesn't appear to offer an alternative for the need for something that's detached. So at this point, then, it seems that Rebbe is certainly, he is convinced that you need to have something detached, and he bases it on this pasuk. As far as Rebbe Chiya is concerned, he may have a different opinion. And if not, then we certainly don't see Rebbe Chiya's mocker for the need for something that's detached. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading. We find this on the outside margin of our Gemara, under the heading Nosei, where we've written in Tolush Ulebesof Chibro, something that was detached and subsequently attached. What is the story with regard to different topics? In the Gemara itself, we have some other geometric forms. We have some that accompany this Gemara. Under the Mivneh heading, we see a little house form. The house form is explained under the Mivneh heading as L'chaber Divrei Rova Adodi. We have different comments of Rova along the way that we want to associate with one another. So this house marking will be employed. In addition to that, we have a diamond. The diamond are dugmois lenoisel hanal, different examples involving the issue of tolush lebesov chibro. So if you scan ahead on the daf, you will notice that we have in diamonds the first case, le'inyan avodes kochavim. How does one classify something that's tolush shubesof chibro with regard to idolatry? The second topic, le'inyan hechsher zroyim. It's regarding the topic of making food capable of absorbing ritual impurity. We can call it readying it for ritual impurity. the third topic, and this is of course the reason that it's brought in, that this discussion appears here, is on the top of Omid Beis, Le'inyan Shechita. As we turn now to the Gemara itself, Omar Rava, Pshito Li, it's obvious to me the following. Tolush ulubesov chibro le'inyan avodis kechavim, havi tolush. If we skip a couple lines, Rava's comment continues, and we should point out that this is a long point. You can see the nun that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line, indicating that all of these lines are part of the point. So, as far as idolatry, Tolu Shubasov Chibro is clear to Rava how to categorize that, and Inyan Hefshes Royim, it's also something that is clear to Rava how to categorize Tolu Shulubasov Chibro. At the bottom line, after there is a certain, there's a bracketed section that's skipped, we have Rava again appearing in the house form, where Rava asks, Tolush ulubesov chibro by shechita, what is the din? So you get an overview of the Gemara, that we have three topics in which the issue of something detached and subsequently becoming attached will have some prominence or significance. They are the topics of idolatry, hechsher zroyim, and shechita. So Rava says that regarding avodas kechavim, it's obvious to be categorized as Havei Tolush. It's considered detached. You'll ask, what difference does it make? So the Gemara will point out that if one were to bow, let us say bowing is a form of service of idolatry, if one were to bow to a mountain or to a tree that is, let's say, a natural growing tree, that would be considered bowing to something that's attached. And the Pasuk says that something like that does not become forbidden as an idol. What would be the story with, let us say, a house built of bricks, where the bricks were detached and then subsequently built into a house now attached to the ground? So Rava tells us that something like that, that was originally detached and then subsequently attached, will become forbidden as a worshipped idol, as opposed to what we said regarding the mountain. We should point out parenthetically that if one were to bow in service to a mountain, even though the mountain itself does not become forbidden as an idol, nevertheless the person who is worshipping the mountain is guilty of a capital offense, because it still is considered idolatry. So, as we go on in the Gemara, after Rava says that the inyan avodas kechavim tolush ulubesov chibro is considered detached, the Omar Rav hamishtachave lebayis shaloi, if one bowed to his own house in an attempt to worship his own house, osro, he makes the house forbidden. One cannot then benefit from that house. The reason that the word shaloh is added here, and it didn't just say mishtachav lebayis, is because there's another principle. If someone comes along and bows to someone else's property, someone else's house, then their house does not become forbidden. There's a principle that says, ein odom oiser dover she'eino shaloh. A person cannot create prohibition on something that is not his own. So we see here that Tolush l'besov chibro is considered tolush. The isalka daita chavi mechubor, because if you were to think that it's considered attached, well, then it wouldn't become usur. Eloheim al hehorim. The pasuk in the context of idolatry speaks about the idols, the gods, on top of mountains. Velo hehorim Eloheim. And the inference from this is that which is on top of the mountain can become an idol, but not the mountains themselves. Le'inyan hechshes royim tanoi hi. As far as how to look at something that was detached, subsequently attached, in the realm of hechshes royim, which has to do with readying food to absorb ritual impurity, this will turn out to be a machlokes tanoim. This, we have to point out, is according to Rava. Later in the Gemara, you will see a bracketed section which features Rav Papa, and we've also called him number two. He's a, as far as the general sugya is considered, we'll consider him a side point, but as far as this internal discussion is concerned, he is a second opinion on how one looks at the, we'll call it the seeming two opinions. He says they are really all one in the same. So Rav Papa does not figure in this discussion, in this general discussion, but as far as Hechsher Zorim, whereas Rava says there is a Machlokas Tanoim, Rav Papa says it's not a Machlokas Tanoim. Now, a word or two about Hechsher Zorim. Fruit, or food items, become maybe we'll start even earlier. If you have, let us say, a fruit that you pulled off a tree, and the fruit is dry, and a sheretz, which is a dead organism that communicates ritual impurity, comes into contact with the fruit, and that the citation of sheretz is just one in any number of examples of things that communicate tumah. However, if the fruit is not wet at the point that it's detached from the tree, then the fruit cannot absorb ritual impurity. There are different types of liquids that are machshir zorim lekabel tumah. It's not important to get into all of them. For right now, we'll just talk about the ability of water to machshir something lekabel tumah. If the fruit is knowingly washed off, then the fruit is said to be muchshir lekabel tumah. If the fruit comes into contact with water, and the person did not want the water to exist, he did not want the water at all in his general situation, then even though the fruit became wet, since the water was totally undesired, there is no hechsher lekabel tumah. If, however, one wanted the water, but not necessarily for the fruit, but the presence of the water in his case was desired, let us say, for something that, let us say, to wash off a bowl, and the water that was used to wash off the bowl splattered from the bowl onto a fruit, so the fruit would be muchshir lekabel tumah because there was a desire for the water for something that is detached. Let us say the person wanted the water, he was interested in the presence of the water for something that's attached, then that would not machshir lekabel tumah. Our question will be, what if someone wanted the presence of the water for something that was once detached and then subsequently attached? If you view it as attached, so that water would not mekabel tumah, would not machshir lekabel tumah. If you view it, the item that was once detached and then attached, as detached, as its original status, then the water, if it splashes on a fruit, will machshir it lekabel tumah. So as we continue in the Gemara, le'inyan hechsher zroyim tanoi hi, it is a machlokes tanoim. Disnan, we have a Tanaic source, Hakoife Ka'ora Al Hakoisel. A person had a bowl and he inverted the bowl and placed it on top of a wall. Bishvil Shetudach, if his inverting of the bowl was for the bowl to be in a position where water will rinse off the bowl, Hareze Bechiyutan. The water that let's say splatters off the bowl, b'chiyutan is an expression that will mean it is capable of being machshir lekabel tumah, readying the fruit or the food item that it touches to absorb tumah. However, b'shvil shelo yiloke hakoisel, eino b'chiyutan. If he wants it, he inverted the bowl so as to protect the wall from water, though, so the water there is not going to, the water that splashes off the bowl won't be machshir lekabel tumah. The Gemara, in looking at this source, says, ha gufa kasha, this source is inherently difficult. Amris b'shvil shetudach, you said on the one hand that if the if it was there, the bowl was placed there in order for it to get rinsed off, harei ze b'chiyutan, that is capable of machshir l'kabaltuma. The water there will machshir l'kabaltuma any fruit that the water splatters onto. We can infer from that we call the aleph case, ha b'shvil sheyudach ha-koisel ein ze b'chiyutan. The only reason that there was hechshir l'kabaltuma was because you were interested in the bowl getting rinsed off. If, however, you were interested in the wall getting rinsed off, that's yudach ha-koisel, so ein ze b'chiyutan. We've squiggled on ein, then there is no hechshir l'kabaltuma. So if you were focusing on the aleph case, it would turn out then that there is no hechshir l'kabaltuma. The Hodr Tani, and then you taught the Bay's case, which said, "Bishvil shelo yiloka koisel eino b'chiyutan." When does the water splashing off the bowl not create hechsher? That's if the whole purpose of the bowl being there was to protect the wall from getting wet. In such a case, the person would have preferred the water not being there at all. We can infer, though, ha b'shvil sheyudach ha-koisel, if the bowl was placed there in order for the, if let us say there was interest in the water rinsing off the wall. Let's go over this last point again. We saw the bowl was inverted in order to protect the wall from water. If, however, he was interested in the water hitting the wall and rinsing off the wall, then harei ze b'chiyutan. Then water that was present with the interest in rinsing off the wall would create hechsher l'kabaltuma. So if you compare with our markings, looking at our dotted dashed underlining, we see here it says shiyudach harei ze b'chiyutan. A few lines up, two lines above this, we saw shiyudach and it said ein ze b'chiyutan. That would seem to be a contradiction. So, Omar Rebbe Lozar, in looking at this seeming contradiction, says, and we've used a little one over here, says, Tavra. Tavra means literally break it, like the word shavar, where the tuf and the shin interchange. It means take the source we have with its inferences and split it. Mi shishonazu lo shonazu. The one who taught the first inference is not the same author as the one who taught the second inference. In other words, there's a source even though there are no names. It is understood that there are two opinions contained within this source. So if we look at the two opinions, what are we in effect saying? We're looking at a wall and saying, according to the first opinion, where the result was shiyudach ha-koisel ein ze b'chiyutan, why is the water there that you wanted for the rinsing off of the wall? Why is it not machshir? Because the wall is made of bricks, which is tolush ulubesof chibro. And it doesn't machshir, the water isn't machshir because the wall is viewed as mechubar. And as we said in our introduction, where you want the water for something that's attached, it's not going to machshir l'kabaltuma. The second opinion, which said that if you want it for, you want the water for the rinsing off of the wall and it splatters on fruits, it is machshir the fruits l'kabaltuma. That is a different opinion who holds that tolush ulubesof chibro is considered tolush. Hence, you understand now what Rava said at the second diamond above, Tanoihi. We saw there, right after that second diamond, he indicated it was a machlokas tanoim. So according to Rebbe Lozer's interpretation of the seeming contradiction in the two inferences, Rava concludes, based on Rebbe Lozer, that it is a machlokas tanoim, and hence he said Tanoihi. We now have another approach to these two sources, or these two inferences. We have a note also in the inside margin that explains why this section appears in brackets. And even before we read the note, we should just note that we should pay attention to the bracket length indicator. You see in your Gemara, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a descending vertical dash dotted line. This indicates that the length of the bracketed section. That will then bring us to the bottom two words of the page, where Boy Rava raises the issue of Toloship Sof Chibro with regard to Shechita. In the meantime, we've noted in the inside margin, Matrasa Sograyim, the purpose of these brackets is Levodeid Es Rav Papa, to isolate Rav Papa. The Gishaso Eino Kigishas Ravo. Rav Papa's approach to this issue of the two inferences is not the same as Rava, who was basing himself on Rebbe Lozer. So we already saw that we put a 1 next to above Rebbe Lozer's name. Now, number 2, a second approach to these two inferences, Rav Papa Omar, Hulo Chad Tanahu. Both of these inferences are, in effect, one in the same. Ha b'koysu mora, ha b'koysu binyan. It depends. Is the wall a naturally formed wall or a constructed wall? If it's a koisel ma'ora, ma'ora literally is a cave. Let us say someone dug out earth, and after he dug out the earth, he created an opening, leaving walls there. The walls, he did not construct the walls. Those are walls that are naturally there. That is a case of mechubar, and that will not, water that was desired for the rinsing off of a kosum ora will not machshir lekabel tuma. However, water that was desired for the rinsing off of a constructed wall, that will machshir lekabel tuma. So according to Rav Papa, we don't see that le'inyan hechshir zroim, we don't see that toloshu b'sof chibro is a machlokes tanoim. We don't see that it's a controversial point. The Gemara continues now in the text. After Rav Papa said one is talking about, one inference is a Kaisel Mora, and the other inference was talking about Kaisel Binyan, constructed wall, v'hochi ko'amar. And thusly, one should understand the source above. Notice we have this in a frame, because in our marking system we treat the restatement of Tanaic sources as if they are Tanaic sources. It says, Hakoifa ko'ora ala koisel, one who inverted a bowl on a wall, b'shvil shetudach, in order for the bowl to be in a position to receive the rain, which will then rinse it off. That rainwater that splashes off the bowl will ready food items to absorb tuma. Machshir them lekabel tuma. We now infer, if he was interested in the wall getting rinsed off, then the water there that eventually flows onto fruits won't machshir lekabel tuma. This is true when the water was desired for a cave wall, a naturally formed wall. Avol b'koisel binyan, if you were dealing with a constructed wall, then b'shvil shelo yiloka koisel, if you inverted the bowl to simply protect the wall, who the eino b'chiyutan, then the water that was there is water that was not desired at all. It would have been better had there been no water than even water, but with an inverted bowl to protect the wall. He would have preferred the water shouldn't have been there at all. So water that's totally undesired is not capable of being machshir lekabel tuma. So we said that's the case when dealing with the kosel binyan, that there's no b'chiyutan, it's not machshir. However, if the water was desired for the purpose of rinsing off the wall, then there would be hechshir lekabel tuma. We should point out along the way that the inverting of the bowl is present in all of these examples. And in the case of the bowl, in the context of the rinsing off of the wall, apparently by inverting the bowl, you would thereby directing the water to reach the wall in question. You'll notice in the source that we just read, in the redone source, we dashed underlined Kaisel Ma'ora, and Sheyudah HaKaisel, a reference to that which we wrote in above that, the Kaisel Binyan. Cases of walls, one case where the desire of the water to rinse off the wall would not lead to hechshir, and that's the case of the Kosel Mora, and the other case of water desired for rinsing off the wall that would result in hechshir, that's the case of the Kosel Binyan. Boy, Rava. Rava, and you can see we've marked him off with a house marking to associate this with Rava opening up this discussion where he said, the first two topics were clear to him, were obvious how to go on Tolus Shubsov Chibro. Now, Tolus Shubsov Chibro, the Indian Shchita Mai, as we turn to Talmud Beis, how is it to be viewed with regard to Shchita? As we continue in the Gemara, we notice triangles. And in our Mivneh heading, in the outside margin, we've noted that with the triangle point facing upwards, this will be a hoichocha, the tolosh of sovchibro mechubar. This will be an attempt to prove that it's considered attached, and hence it will not be acceptable for shchita. On the other hand, we'll see it this triangle inverted. In that case, the Gemara will be attempting to show that it's considered the opposite, namely Tolush. The Gemara now, Mai. We're asking Tolush Shubasofibra, something that originally was detached, subsequently attached. Is it acceptable for Shchita? Bearing in mind that for Shchita we require something that's detached. Toshma, Hoyatsur Yoitsimina Koiso, a rock was projecting from a wall. O Shahoya Kana Oila Meilov, or there was a naturally growing reed. Both a rock and a reed potentially could be used as knives for cutting for Shchita. The Shochat Bo, and it was used for Shchita, Shchita So Psula. So we have two examples here. One of them, and we've dashed underlined the one that we want to emphasize, is the tsur, the rock emerging from a wall. So it would appear on the surface that Tolush Shubasov Chibro is considered mechubar, because this source says that the shchita is posel. The Gemara says this is not conclusive. This is talking about a rock emerging from a cave wall. In other words, the rock was never detached. It was part of the natural formation. And that's called, it was always attached, it was never detached. Daikonami, and through careful reading of this source, you can see that in fact it is a koisomora wall, a naturally formed wall with its rock projection. De Kotoni Dumyo de Kona Oilo Me'elo, because in the same source it taught a case of a naturally growing reed. That's something that was never detached. Shma Mino. So this is conclusive evidence that the tsur, the Yotze Min HaKoisel, is a rock emerging from a cave wall and not a constructed wall. So we don't have any example in this source of something that was once detached. Toshma, we have another source coming up, and you notice the triangle is inverted, indicating that we're going to try to prove that something that was attached, that was detached, subsequently attached and then used for shchita, is considered detached and hence a good shchita. The source says noatz sakin b'koisel, v'shochat ba, someone wedged a knife into a wall, and with the knife projecting from the wall, he then v'shochat ba used it while attached to the wall for shchita. Shchita sukshera, the shchita is acceptable. The Gemara says this too is not relevant to what we are discussing. Shiny sak, in the case of the knife, is different. The lo mevatile, he is not going to be leaving it there, abandoning the knife there. What we are interested in is in something that was once detached, subsequently attached to the floor, to the ground, to a structure. And the item that he attached, he plans on abandoning there, leaving it there. What is the din? By the way, there are pictures that accompany these discussions also in the Sichas Chulin. You can see there is a case of a knife attached to a wall and it being used to slaughter the animal. And as we continue in the Gemara, we have another source, Toshma. B'mechubar l'karka shchitaso k'shera. This is the continuation of the source we just read, and it says here, if you used something that's attached to the ground, it's the shchita is good. So it would seem that something that was detached, subsequently attached to the ground, it's acceptable. So once again, we would see that tolush b'sof fibro is considered tolush. The Gemara says this citation is not conclusive. Dilma pirushikom afarish law. Maybe this is not in fact a separate case, but rather an explanation of the case that just preceded it. My mechuber lekarka. What is it that's mechuber lekarka, that's attached to the ground, whose shechita is good? Sakin de lo mevatelei. It's the case of the sakin that was cited just before, an item that you do not abandon there, that you don't leave there. But once again, we are interested in what is the story, what's the halacha with regard to things that you do leave there. Omar Mar. Here we have a, it should be pointed out actually before we go on in the Gemara, that regarding the topic of Tolu Shubisov Chibro in the context of Shechita, we did not reach a conclusion based on these sources. At each point, as you noticed, at each point that something was cited to resolve the issue, it was then deflected. Omar Mar, this is a quote of that which we saw before. Noatz sakin because of a shochat bo shchita sukshera. If one wedged a knife into a wall and used it for shchita, it's acceptable. Omar Rav Onan, Omar Shmuel, Lo Shano Elosha Sakin Lemalo Vetzavar Be'emo Lamato. The acceptability of such a shechita is provided the knife is above it, and the animal is below. So you're in effect holding the animal and moving the animal back and forth along the blade of the knife. That we say would be an acceptable shechita. Avo Sakin Lemato Vetzavar Be'emo Lamalo. If, however, the wedged in knife that's wedged into the wall is located below the animal and you are holding the animal above the knife, this, Rav Onan says, would not be acceptable. Chayshinon Shemo Yidros. We're afraid that as a result of the weight of the animal, because it is above the knife, there will be a downward motion, a downward pressure, and as opposed to a slicing action that takes place, that's called drosa, and that would render the shechita unfit. The Gemara asks, v'ha katani, but we have a Tanaic source that we saw on Tes Vav Amid Beis, in a source that said Bakol Shochatin, and it said in that source, it said the following, Bain Shasakin Lamato Vitsavar Bemalamalo, and notice we've dashed underlined Savar Bemalamalo where the animal is above. Bain Shasakin Lamalo Vitsavar Bemalamato, or the case of the Sakin being above and the animal being below. But in either case, it said there on Tesvav on the Beis in this citation, it said Bakol Shochatin, that these are acceptable forms of Shechita. So we see Savar Bemalamalo, which we dashed underlined, as being acceptable. Two lines above, we saw of Onan Amar Shmuel quoting Tzavar, the case of Tzavar Be'im Olamala being unacceptable. To deal with this, we will see two approaches. The first is Rav Zvid, and we've numbered him as number one, and a few lines later you can see a number two where Rav Popa's name is underlined. He represents a second approach. If we skip for a moment to the second approach, it's a simple approach. Rav Papa says that we can accept the case of the tzavor of the animal, the neck of the animal above, if you're dealing with with a bird, the kolil, it's lightweight, so that the fear of downward pressure because of the weight of the creature won't be a factor. Now let's go over this, but we have to start with one. Omar Rav Zvid, litzdodin kotoni. The source that we just read is to be read in a litzdodin fashion. This will be clear as we look into the Gemara itself, but the Rashi explains litzdodin katani, the ha reisha de braisa tana tolush ubesof tolush umechubar kiktani bakol shochtin beim tolush beim umechubar v'chi hodar v'siim seifa bein shasakin lemalo lav atravayu atolush v'travayu amechubar kaimi. Rashi is explaining that the beginning of the Braisa dealt with cases that are whether it's attached or detached. But then in the Seifa, the cases that were taught were not going on both of those scenarios of attached and detached, but rather one case is going on the attached knife and the other case is going on a detached knife. That is now explained in the Gemara. Sakin lemata, if the knife is below, v'tzavar beima lemalo, then bitolush. Then it will be acceptable if the knife is detached. Hence, if you have, let us say, the animal is above, true, he may be weighing down, but since the knife is in your hand, it's not attached, the looseness or the mobility of the knife will, will say, compensate for the fact that the weight of the behemoth is pressing down on it, because the knife too will be descending as a result of whatever weight the behemoth represents, and as a result you're not involved with a drossa problem. Drossa is where there's a distinct downward pressure, and since the knife is tolush, the knife will not be offering, will not be presenting resistance to the behemoth located above with all of its weight. However, sakin lamalo, v'tzavar behemoth lamata, if the knife is above and the animal is below, then b'mechuber, then that will be acceptable even if the knife is attached. Rav Papa Omar ba'oifa de kolo. Rav Papa says that what we thought was a contradiction or a challenge to Rav Onan from Tesvav Amud Beis, there where it said even if the animal is above, it's okay. That's talking about the shechita of a bird. The bird being very lightweight, there is no fear of drosa because even though it is above the knife. Omar Rav Chisda, Omar Rav Yitzchak, the Amri Lo b'Masni Satana, either Rav Chisda is quoting Rav Yitzchak, or the following is in a Tanaic source, we see the following. Chamisha Dvorim, Nemru B'Kremis Shulkana. There are five points that are spoken about or stated in the context of a reed. Ein Shochtin Ba, it's not to be used for slaughtering. The Ein Malin Ba, it's not used to be used for circumcision. Of course, this Kremis Shulkana is something that is sharp and capable of cutting, but nevertheless, not to use it for shechita, not to use it for circumcision. The Ein Mechatchin Ba Basar, one should not use it for slicing meat. The Ein Mechatzitzin Ba Shinayim, one should not use it as a toothpick. The Ein Mechanchin Ba, and one should not use it for wiping something off. This will have to leave for the Gemara to explain what we're talking about when we speak about Ein Mechanchin Ba. The Gemara goes over these points and asks a question focusing on the first case. Ein shochatin ba, are you saying not to use the kremis shulkana for shechita? Va'atanya, but we have a Tanaic source that says bakol shochatin, one can use any implement for shechita, bein betzur, whether it be a rock, bein betzusas, or a piece of glass, bein bekremis shulkana. And notice we've dashed underlined that which is of significance for us right now, the issue of the reed. In this source, so you see, it teaches that you can use a reed for shechita. Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa answers that there is no kasha, there is no problem. The simuna di agma. The simuna di agma is a type of reed that does not splinter. Rashi says, Esiv hagodob agme mayim v'kori lishka v'kshu yavesh chodud v'chotech v'en kesimim nivdolun heimenu. The problem that we did not explain, but we simply read it as part of a list, the problem with the Kremis Shulkana in the original list was that the reed has a tendency to splinter. If that be the case, while you're, let's say, cutting the animal's neck with the reed, if it happens to splinter, one of the pointy ends of the splintering might end up piercing one of the neck organs before the majority of it is cut. And if it's pierced, that would render the shechita unacceptable. However, if you have a type of reed that does not splinter, so it functions as a regular knife, and you can use it for shechita. The Ein Mechatchin Bo Bosar. Another point that was mentioned the third point was not to use it as a knife for cutting meat. Rav Papa mechatech bo kirvei dogim. Rav Papa would use the kremes shulkanah for cutting fish entrails. De zigi, the fish entrails were clear. Zigi, Rashi uses a French word which actually comes out like we say in English, clear, transparent. Therefore, if there was any splintering of this kremes shulkanah, you would see it and avoid the danger of swallowing splintered reed material. Rabo bar Rav Huna mechatech bo oifa. Rabo would use the kremes shulkanah for cutting bird or fowl meat. The rochich, it's very soft, so that because of its soft nature, there would be no fear of the kremes shulkanah splintering. The splintering is a phenomenon that arises when you're cutting animal meat and subjecting the kremes shulkanah, this reed, to pressure. That would cause splintering. But the fowl meat, since it's soft, won't cause the splintering. The ein mekanchin ba. Before going on in the Gemara, there's a certain assumption that's made. One should not use this reed because of the fear of splintering for mekanchin. Mekanchin would be what we call a cleansing ourselves after relieving oneself in the facilities, in the bathroom. And you can imagine the anatomical danger that could be that a person would pose himself in using a kremes shulkanah, let's say in the absence of toilet paper, using this reed material for cleansing oneself. So the Gemara asks, why do you teach it, the kremes shulkanah, as being objected to based on the anatomical danger? Tepuk lei mishum de omar mar, learn out that we would oppose to using it based on the following teaching. Hamakaneach bedover sha'ur shaletes bo, one who uses items for his hygienic purposes that are inflammable, they're flammable, for example, reed material. Shinov noshros, the shinov is an expression indicating, which translated would mean teeth, but it's a reference to the skin or the tissue matter that's pun not intended at all, but the physical skin material that's located at one's anus. They will be subjected to maybe we'll call it a hemorrhoid condition, which the Gemara describes as shinov noshros. The flaps of skin will fall out and become exposed. So we're teaching so far not to use the kremes shulkanah for mekanchim, but in the context of it being a problem as splintering, where we have another teaching that says not to use things that are flammable because of the problem of shinov noshros. So you'll ask, of course, so what's inflammable? Well, the answer to that is one could use rocks or stones, smooth stones, as the Gemara features in Masechet Shabbos and elsewhere. One can use them for, and that's what the Gemara makes reference to this from time to time, using stones for hygienic purposes. That's the Shas recommendation. Everyone, of course, is going to be asking about the issue of, well, toilet paper is also flammable. That is worthy of a separate discussion. For our purposes, the Gemara is simply focusing on the fact that the kremes shulkanah seems to be flammable. So isn't that sufficient reason for not using it, regardless of the issue of splintering? So the Gemara answers, the term mekain mekanchin bo isn't a reference to the wiping, the cleansing of oneself from the facilities, but rather amarav popo kinuach pimako kwarminan. We're talking about a case of someone who has some type of say skin injury, where there's a bruise and one wants to like wipe off the blood from the bruise. So for that, the issue of flammability is a non-issue, but there still is the issue of the splintering. So if one has a bruise and wants to clean off the blood flow, he should not use kremes shulkanah because of the splintering aspect. Hakol shochatim ulaoilom shochatim. These are expressions that we saw in the Mishnah on Daf Tes Vav Amid Beis, in order to explain these terms, we will see several explanations. You can see under our Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin, we have a house form that appears, and there's also numbering that takes place in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Here you see a number 1, and as you continue on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, if you happen to have that available, the second line from the top, you'll see Rav Yosef in a house form, and 4 lines from the bottom, Rava will appear as number 3. So we are trying to explain the terms that we have seen in the Mishnah, Hakol Shochatin and Li'olam Shochatin. So we now turn to the Gemara. Hakol Shochatin means Hakol B'Shchita V'Afilu Of. Everything needs Shchita, meaning all animals, including birds. The Torah does not specify the need for Shchita by birds, so therefore the Mishnah compensates, we'll say, for the absence in the Torah, and informs us that birds also require Shchita. Le'olam Shochatin. Now, this expression is a, we'll say, a time or historical time-oriented point, that it's always mutter to shecht and eat. Man Tana. Which Tana would say that it's always mutter to shecht and eat? We will see later that there's a Tanaic controversy regarding the transition of the Jewish people from their sojourn in the Midbar during the exodus from Mitzrayim, from Egypt. The halachas regarding slaughtering and eating meat in the Midbar, and slaughtering and eating meat upon entrance to Eretz Yisrael. So at this point, says Le'olam Shochtim, this source is saying that there was never any point in time that there would be any restriction from shechting and eating. So if you are of that opinion, who are you? Mantana, who says that? Omar Rabba, Rabbi Yishmoel, he. This is in accordance with Rabbi Yishmoel. Desanyo, we have a Tanaic source that says, Ki yarchiv Hashem Elokecha es gvulcho kasher diberloch, v'yomarto ochlo basor v'chulei. The pasuk describes the entrance of the Jewish people into the land of Israel and their desire to eat meat. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Lo bo hakosuv elo lahatir lahem basar taiva. The pasuk is coming to allow the consumption of meat on the basis of simple desire. What do we mean, simple desire? Shebetchilo ne'asar lahem basar taiva. Originally, when they were in the Midbar, they were not allowed to simply shecht and eat meat at their whim, but rather, if someone wanted to eat meat, they would have to have brought it as a sacrifice in the Mishkan. Mishenichnesu la'aretz huter lahem baser taiva. Once they entered the land, it became mutter for them to slaughter meat, even outside the context of a sacrifice. In other words, slaughtering meat for one's personal consumption became allowed. That is as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned. There is another opinion, that of Rabbi Akiva, who is featured on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, that indicated, that has a different approach to that issue. We'll leave it, we'll leave that unexplained right now. We are more interested right now in focusing on Rabba and what he does with this opinion of Rabbi Shmuel and how he attaches it to the Mishnah. The Mishnah mentioned Le'olam Shochatin, that Shchita is always allowed. What is he? What does he mean by that? The Achshav, Rabba says, this is now Rabba commenting, and we understand this as Rashi explains. It's not part of the Tanaic source. Rabba comments, the Achshav Shegolu, now that there is an exile, and we're no longer in Eretz Yisrael, Yochol Yachzru Li'Isuron HaRishon, should we go back to the original restriction? In other words, to what the originally means, before we entered the land. In other words, before entering the land, one could not just shecht and eat meat at his will. That was true in the case of a midbar. There was an expectation to bring it as sacrifices, but simple shechita and eating was not allowed in the midbar. That's before they were in the land. Now that, again, there is exile, and many are not in the land, that's Achshav Shegolu, Yochol Yachzru Lisuron Harishon. Should we go back to the original prohibition of Basar Taipa not being allowed? L'kach Shoninu, therefore, the Mishnah comes to teach L'Oilom Shochatin, to tell me that it is always allowed, always meaning from the point of entrance to the land of Israel, even though there is now a Golus, there is now a diaspora, nevertheless, there is an allowance to shecht and eat. Maskif lo Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef objects to Rabbah's presentation and his explanation. As far as the way Rabbah explains things, the thrust is on the issue of the eating. We're not really here to place emphasis on halachas of shechita. We're interested in saying that one is always after the entrance to the land, even though there is now an exile, one is still allowed to eat meat. So, if that be the case, why is there talk in the source of, in our Mishnah, of La'olam Shochatin? The Iker point is the eating of the meat. The Iker meaning the main point, according to Rabbah, is that it is always mutter to eat meat. So Rav Yosef asks, "Hi, la'olam shochatin, that which the Mishnah says, la'olam shochatin, really, la'olam shochatin v'ochlin miboyalei." It should have said that there is a permanent allowance for shechita and the subsequent eating of the meat. That's what it should have said. The oid, and furthermore, further problem, me'ikara my time itzar. Why originally was there a prohibition of simple, of random shechita and eating? Mishum d'havi mikrevi l'mishkan, because they were near the Mishkan. And since you're near the Mishkan, if you're already interested in eating meat, why not bring it as a sacrifice? Ula basof my time ishteru. And then afterwards, after they left, they entered the land of Israel, and they were no longer in the Mishkan. Why was the meat allowed on a random basis, meaning on a whenever you want, you can? Davum rachki mi Mishkan, because they're far away from the Mishkan, and it would be too much of too much trouble to expect the person who wants to have a steak to go from Tzfas, from the northern part of Israel, to Yerushalayim to offer a sacrifice because he's interested in a steak. Well, if that be the case, then the kolshekein hashtad archiku lutvei, and all the more so that there's an exile that we're even further away. And that being the case, there's no havamina to think that after the exile, and since the exile set in, that we would go back to the original way. The original way, namely that there was an expectation to bring all meat as a sacrifice, was clearly, says Rav Yosef, because of the proximity to the Mishkan. If you remove that factor, then it's obvious that there's no expectation, and there would be no going back to original way. So how can, Rav Yosef is asking on Rabbah, how can Rabbah suggest that the Mishnah is trying to dispel a havamina, a point that I might have thought, when I never would have even considered the idea of going back to the original way, when the original way was based on the close proximity to the Mishkan? Nowadays, being that we are so far away, there is no havamina to think that we would go back to the original way, and hence the Mishnah isn't coming to teach something that is so obvious to us. So with that, we conclude basically Rav Yosef's objection, and in the next shiur we will then see Rav Yosef's own explanation as to what the Mishnah is trying to accomplish when it says La'olam Shochatin. So with that, we conclude our shiur for today.